dude, I got a little surprise for you. So I was doing a live last night, a live Q&A on my Instagram, and which I don't really do very often. It was sort of just like a one-off. I was done with my strength workout. I was going to do some cardio. It was late at night. It was a long day. It was a long, busy day yesterday. It was a good day, just long day.
Yeah.
And I was really tired. I was like, man, I really can't give it my all. So I'm just going to basically do like almost zone two. It wasn't fully zone two. I'll just do almost zone two, and then I'll just do a live Q&A. And Sunny Hetrick from Instagram said, hey, I absolutely love your podcast. It has been so fun to listen to Tony find his confidence in podcasting.
Aw, shucks.
It was cool, right? I was like, oh, man, I'm going to screenshot this and tell him tomorrow. So
I don't think I've found it yet, but I appreciate that.
you're finding it with every episode, I think. And like, it sounds great. I have a feeling you might, because you can feel any fear or anxiety or insecurity, but we can't feel it. We can just see it. Mm-hmm. Or like, we can just hear you. You mask it great, just if you're masking a lot of it, it doesn't come across at all. So if your goal is to fake it till you make it, you've made it.
Oh, thanks, man. I think the biggest thing for me has been the process of listening back and just being self-critical and thinking, oh, I could have said that better, or I could have asked that question in a different way.
Mm.
Or, you know, I just trailed off for a while. Stuff like that, where it's just, man, could have been better. But no, it's an exercise in humility as well, which is great.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, podcasts are interesting. I like them so much because for the listener, it's almost as though they're a part of the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And if the conversation is too structured, it doesn't feel real. Because it's not, it's structured, it's manufactured. Whereas that's why, like, literally right before we started recording, you were like, hey, are you good with the prompt? I was like, I don't even know what we're talking about. And you're like, you just want to jump in? I'm like, yeah, let's just jump in. Because the realness of that conversation is so much better than you giving me the prompt, me being like, okay, cool, got it, da da da. And then like us going in like a little bit prepared for it. There's a realness to a conversation that is not structured that I think is very unique to be a part of.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm with it. I did want to run something else by you real quick before we start. Speaking of realness.
Okay.
I injured my knee.
No.
Yeah.
In jiu-jitsu?
Yeah.
How did you injure your knee?
Just on the mats on a warm-up. Like, not even a cool story about...
Like, you weren't training with someone. You were... What happened?
So, we were doing... do you know the drill where you're trying to tap the other person's foot? And they're trying to tap your foot, and it's all just about positioning and footwork and getting in and out. And so I was doing that, and I just felt something happen in my knee.
There was no contact or anything. It was just like a change of direction, and then you felt
change of direction or something. Yeah. And it was like, oh, I can't really put weight on my right leg right now. So I like switched to goofy foot. And then like we sit down and we're like, you know, the coach is just talking about the lesson, and then we're gonna go again, you know, keeping things in mind. I'm like, guys, I gotta sit this one out. I go to like stand up, and I'm like, oh shit, yeah, that's something's not
right.
Was
it like a sharp shooting pain? Was it like there was no pain, but it felt like difficult, like jelly, like it was difficult to put weight on it? What did it feel like?
It was both. It was like a sharp pain, kind of like a popping sensation. I don't even know if it made a sound, but that's what I felt in my head.
You felt like you felt one pop when it happened?
I didn't feel it when it happened. I felt it when I got up, and then afterwards I was like standing by the sides of the mats, just kind of watching, like resting. I wasn't in pain while I'm standing straight.
Well, that's
so I was like,
news.
All right, let me try this. I like lift my leg. I have full range of motion. You know, I can stand on one foot and go 90 degrees and all that. And so I'm like, all right. And then after a few minutes, I'm like, all right, I don't feel anything. Let me just test this. So I slowly start lowering myself in a squat, very slowly. Good, 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 good. Once I hit about 75 degrees, all of a sudden I feel that same pain, instability popping. And I'm like, yep, something's up.
Where was it? Was it in the back of the knee, front of the knee, one
like
of the sides?
Like the side. Yeah, like the
Which
outside.
Side? The outside. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Do you still feel it right now?
So that's the thing. No, this happened because I guess we missed last week. So this happened almost 2 weeks ago now.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't really feel it unless I walk on it wrong or do something. And then at night, it'll be uncomfortable in certain positions, or like every once in a while, I'll just get like a twinge of like, ow, that really hurt. And then it'll be fine. So hoping it's not super serious, but I do think it's a ligament and not something else. I just don't know how bad it is. So I'm going to go to an orthopedist tomorrow.
Good. That sounds like an LCL, lateral cruciate ligament. That sounds like an LCL issue.
Okay.
Hopefully it's not too serious. I would imagine it's not torn just based on the range that you have with it. And it's you might have had some type of a sprain. There might be some type of a low grade issue. Have you taken the last couple of weeks off completely?
Yeah.
Good. Perfect. Then you handled it perfectly well.
No, I got a knee brace. I had crutches for a few days just to stay off of it. But, you know, I can move around and whatnot. I'm just kind of slow. And I'm really glad because you were talking about your rib last time. And I'm really glad we had that conversation, because I was like, you know what? I'm going to get really good at pull-ups.
Yeah. Yes, dude. I love that.
Like, so I was
you've
getting
been
in my
out
head.
Pull-ups?
Well, I'm working on it, but you know, it's just, you go down the rabbit hole, like imagining if you're going to be injured for the rest of your life or whatever.
Yeah.
And so it's just like, man, like I got to get out of that space. And so I was like, oh, what can I do? Like, I can do like dips and pull-ups, man.
Yes. Well, I love that. I mean, that's an amazing mindset to have, and you handled it really well. It's not like you kept trying to push through that pain, which some people do, and then it's a devastating injury that takes a year to recover from instead of maybe a month or two, which I think that would probably be what this will be at most. It sounds like it's almost there as well, but like better to keep taking time off until you just don't feel it. So that sucks. It is one of the things that, like, it's funny. It wasn't a contact injury, right? It wasn't like you were actually doing jujitsu. You were just doing a warm-up drill. And that's one of the things that even that for me is, I remember when I first started jujitsu, and this isn't just for jujitsu. This is literally any athletic event.
Yeah.
I noticed a huge difference between the warm-ups in jujitsu and the warm-ups you would do for a workout. Big difference. And frankly, the warm-ups for jujitsu are not smart at all. There's like, they're just usually they're not. I've had a couple of coaches who were also personal trainers who structured wonderful warm-ups. The vast majority they just do what they did when they were taught as kids how to warm up. And doing a rapid change of direction drills as part of warm up is a really bad idea. Like, especially for an adult who probably hasn't done any movement like this in a long, long time. Your tendons, your joints, they're not prepared for it. So going back to when you decide to go back, take those drills very lightly. Mm-hmm. And be okay losing that round. It's okay to lose the toe touch game. Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't matter. The purpose is just warm up and under, like, getting your brain and central nervous system warm up as well. So don't juke really fast or plant your foot and change direction really quickly, especially not early on in the day when you're not warmed up. Or make sure you warm up before you start doing that stuff. Get there 10, 15 minutes earlier and start warming up beforehand so that you're good.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I'm just not used to being on those 2-inch wrestling mats. You know, I firmly believe if I was out on grass or something, probably wouldn't have happened.
Yeah,
I could be wrong, but that's just my gut feeling is, you know, the instability of those mats. Mm-hmm. When you are planting and changing direction, you know, it's going to put your leg at an angle that it wouldn't on a solid surface.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You're 100% right.
Yep.
Well, so are you going to go back, or are you done? You're done with jiu-jitsu now?
Well, I want to see, you know, where my knee is.
Yeah, smart.
To be truthfully honest, if it's the kind of thing where it's going to be prone to injury again, I enjoy being able to move around and carry things and be active.
Yeah.
And, you know, part of my livelihood is attached to that when I'm not doing podcasts. So that is kind of a somber reminder of just like, man, like, it's nice to be able to move and be healthy. But, you know, I told myself I was kind of going to give it the the college try. And so if it's like, hey, it's all good, this is a freak thing, it wasn't so bad, you know, I'd love to give it, you know, that 6 months or whatever and just see if I really take to it or not.
Yeah.
So we'll see. Jury's out.
Let me know what the doctor says tomorrow.
Yep. Yep. Good. So now that that's out of the way, our suspenseful you not knowing what the topic is moment. You ready?
Yeah. Drum roll.
So we got a great question about training for teenagers. And she was asking, you know, okay, so let me actually just read her question, but then I wanted to zoom out as well. She says, hi, could you and Jordan do a podcast for teenagers who weightlift or teenagers' parents that weightlift? My son is 15, and I think I inspired him to weightlift. And in the beginning, we trained together. Now he trains with his friends and shares very little. He does less and less cardio. Is there anything important to think about for him or for me? Please keep my handle private. Thanks.
Well, we will definitely keep your handle private. It's a great question. There are so many different aspects of this, like the teenager, like sort of removing himself or separating, distancing himself from his parent. And then like, you know, the little to no cardio and that, like, there's so many different things going on here. Where did you want to start?
So I would love to just zoom out and talk about weight training for youth in general, and then zoom back in on kind of those specifics. A good place to start in my mind would be, when do you think it's appropriate or a good idea for a child or a youth or a teenager to start strength training?
So as you were saying this, as you were like moving along in the sentence, in my head, I was like, the term he uses at the end is going to dictate my response. If you had said weight training, that would have been different than if you had said strength training.
Okay.
And so that is, and you said strength training, which in my opinion is the correct term to use there, because they're often used interchangeably and they're not. And I think anyone, regardless of age, can start strength training. Anybody, like any, even like a little toddler can strength train. Because what you don't realize for a toddler is like, just playing is strength training. Like, you can't go on the monkey bars and not call that strength training.
Yeah.
Right. It's like so that 100% like, or there's so many things that toddlers will do that would count as strength training. And so for me, strength training doesn't necessarily include weights. From a very young age, you can start them strength training with body weight movements and getting them strong with push-ups and with squats and with lunges and with like TRX rows or inverted rows. Any body weight movement is wonderful. And the way that I plan to do it with my daughter and, God willing, future kids is get them to a point where they can master their body weight. Once a child can master their body weight and show specifically that they have control of their body weight throughout these ranges of motion, now you can start adding weight and start doing weight training on top of it, regardless of age. You can start, there's myths around like, you know, it's going to stunt their growth or whatever. No, it's not accurate. It's not supported in the literature at all. And I understand coming from a 5'4" guy, this might not be holding much weight with you, but that's my genetics. And I'm like taller than both my parents, which is wild. And neither of them lifted weights. I'm just a short Jewish guy. All right. But so I remember when I was a younger coach, I did a lot of coaching for young kids. And if any parents are listening who have seen their children do different sports or even try and work out, they're like a baby deer, especially like the younger they are, they have no control over their body. And it's actually pretty crazy because you can start to notice freak athletes at very young ages. You can notice these young kids who have outrageous control over their body and they're just destroying all of the other kids. It's like, what the fuck is that kid doing? It's like, well, that's a freak athlete. That kid's got it. They've got the gene, they've got the luck. And yes, it doesn't mean they don't have to work hard, but from a young age, they have control over their body in a way that is not usual for most kids. working with kids is so difficult. Never mind the attention span issues. Never mind they're all over the fucking place. They have no control over their body. And so when I would work with young kids, the main goal was fun. Mm-hmm. Priority is fun. Let's make sure they're having fun. So one thing my buddy Adam Pine and I used to do, we would coach kids at a gym in Boston. We would take one of those reaction balls that baseball players use. So it's like a ball with these little bumps on it. And when you throw it, the bumps are different sizes in different places. So it changes the direction of where the ball rolls.
Random bounce. Yeah.
Yeah, random bounces. So we would take one of those and we would throw that. And we would, all right, try and get it. And then like they have to change direction. They have to try and anticipate where the ball is going, hand-eye coordination. And they had a blast doing it. It was fun. We would play dodgeball with them. We'd play like monkey in the middle with so many different things. A lot of it was just play. Mm-hmm. And then in between play, we would have structured, all right, like 5 push-ups, whatever it is. And then in those 5 push-ups, we would correct their technique. Make sure they're using full range of motion, make sure they're controlling themselves with the full range of motion. Now, this is also different because we were their coaches. Their parents mm-hmm. put them in this program. Whereas if you're a parent, you're not their coach, like you're often going to be working out with them. But keeping this in mind, keeping play in mind, keep it. And this is, again, for young kids, not for teenagers, but mm-hmm. keeping play in mind, having fun in mind, and just remembering control. Slow movements. They shouldn't be doing like super fast and explosive stuff. Not necessarily because it's bad, but because they already do fast and explosive stuff. Kids out of nowhere will spaz out and just fucking start sprinting out of nowhere and like twirling and jumping and skipping and hopping, just like do the craziest shit from dead stop. And yeah. It's wild. And they're fine. And then we get to our age, Tony, and we play this toe touch game and we hurt our fucking knee, right? It's like, where the hell, what's going on? Like I did foam rolling. I did this whole warm up. Like it's kids have this amazing ability to move and move unobstructed by and large. And a lot of it has to do with the age of their joints and their tendons and all of that. But also because they do it so much, it's just, it's normal for their bodies. When you start to get older, you're sitting down more, you're moving less, your joints get accustomed to that. So then all of a sudden you do this fast juke and your LCL just pops, right?
Yeah.
So for kids, it's about fun. Once they can control a squat body weight, once they can control a lunge, they can control a push-up, they can control the chin-up, they can control an inverted row. Now, cool. Now we can start strength training. Now we can start weightlifting, excuse me. And that's where we can start with basic dumbbell rows. You can start with basic goblet squats. You could start with basic goblet lunges. You could start with kettlebell deadlifts. You could start with dumbbell bench press, any of these basic foundational movements. And that's where you can start. And I have no idea what's going to happen with my daughter and, again, God willing, future children. But I would anticipate that my daughter will be able to lift weights by the time she's between 8 and 10. And wow. It doesn't mean she's going to be maxing out. It doesn't mean she's going to be able to like lift I'm not going to have her lifting as much as she possibly can in the squat or the deadlift or the bench press, but she will have weights in her hands for weight training specifically by 8 to 10, I would imagine. And she'll have weights in her hands long before that. She'll, you know, be in the gym mm-hmm. with me and we'll be doing stuff, but she will not be actually following a weight training program until she can show me that she can control her body first. And yeah, that's absolutely doable by a young age for sure.
Yeah. Have you seen those like plastic barbell toys
mm-hmm,
that
mm-hmm.
they sell? So like kids can kind of hang out with you in the gym and
we've already got her some like dumbbells that she's not even a year yet, but she's right. Got one dumbbell that lights up and that has this voice that comes out. It's like, lift with me, do 1, 2, 3. And, you know, she loves it. She doesn't know what it's saying, but she loves it. So, yeah, we've already got a little like kettlebell. It's not even a real, it's not even a weighted kettlebell. It's like a knit, like someone mm-hmm. knit this kettlebell. Mm-hmm. So it weighs nothing. But, yeah, we've already got her all that stuff and.
That's
very
awesome.
Much going to normalize exercise in the gym within her life.
So have you heard the idea that the age you are relative to your peers in like school is a predictor for like athletic achievement?
Malcolm Gladwell. Yeah.
Is that Malcolm Gladwell?
That's Malcolm Gladwell. He wrote his book Outliers. This is one of the examples he used. It's an amazing book and it's an amazing example. He spoke about hockey players, depending on when they were born, were more or less likely to make it into the NHL. And he mm-hmm. brought out all the statistics, and it made all the sense in the world based on the age cutoff for when they could be in like the next league. So when they were, and I don't know the exact time frames, my buddy Mike, who's a hockey player, would know this to the day, but there's a certain day at which if you're born after this day, then you play in the younger league. If you're born before this day, then you play in the older league. And so it might not seem like much, but there's a huge amount of growth that happens within, even within that year. If anyone's had a kid, you see how quickly your kid can grow in a very brief period of time. And so if you have these kids who are the biggest in their group, and they're the biggest and the strongest, and have developed more than the younger kids, then they're going to be more likely to be spotted by scouts. They're going to be more likely to be given opportunities to try out. They're just going to be the more dominant players. So 100% you're based on your birthday, specifically with something like hockey, that makes a lot of sense. Something like wrestling, for example, that doesn't matter. Hmm. It really doesn't matter, because all that matters, like when I went into wrestling, my freshman year, I had already been wrestling since I was 8 years old. So by the time I got there, I was going up against a junior named Evan. He started wrestling when he was a freshman in high school. So he had 2 years wrestling experience. I had like six.
Yeah.
So I beat him for the varsity spot when I was a freshman, even though I was several years younger. I felt the strength difference. He was definitely stronger than me for sure. But I was able to win just because I had that technical experience. And so it was less about what league you're allowed to be in and more about, all right, whoever's the best wins. Like, this is the one who competes on varsity right now. So it depends on how the sport is structured as well.
Yeah, interesting. And when did you first start weightlifting?
I remember the first time I ever actually lifted a weight. We were on vacation. I don't even know if it was technically a vacation. I think we might have been on a trip, because something was wrong with one of my family members, and my mom made it seem like it was a vacation. But across the street from us, there was a shopping center, and there was a gym. And my mom, I think she was looking for stuff for us to do.
That's right.
And so I've told the story, right? Where we went in and like, I went up to the cable machine, started doing tricep press downs, and it's like, this is awesome. But I was really young. I was definitely like sub 10 years old. Mm-hmm. But I didn't make it a consistent thing.
Yeah, you were playing.
Yeah, I was just playing around. The gym was a big playground to me. It still is. And but I didn't really start consistently weight training until I got into high school, until I was 14. I was very excited about it. I always wanted to lift. I had a couple friends that lifted and strength trained, and I was always jealous when we would go to their house, whether it was Sam Silton or he always had like this bench press in his basement, or David Gorelick, any of these people, they would always strength train. And I was always jealous. I wanted to do it. But, you know, my mom and dad, they had no experience with it. They had no idea what it was at all. And we just didn't emphasize that in my house. So, by the time I got to high school, I was really excited because my high school had an amazing physical education program. They had an incredible gym. And so one of the electives was strength training or weight training. And I took it with this amazing teacher. His name was Mr. Gonzalez. And I was so excited. As soon as I started taking that class, once you took that class, you were allowed to use the gym, you're allowed to use the fitness center in the high school. Mm-hmm. If you didn't take that class, you weren't allowed to use it because you weren't given the education in order to use all the equipment. And it was a surprisingly good education. Like, Mr. Gonzalez was very, very good, especially for just like a standard PE teacher. Like, it was remarkable, the education that he gave. And then I started going every single day at 14 years old, never stopped.
Now, was it a social thing for you, or was it like a individual endeavor? Like, how are you thinking about it, and how was it manifesting in that way?
So I had two thoughts in mind. One thought was, I want to get really strong and I want to be really fit for wrestling. Mm-hmm. Because I had felt what it felt like, is a weird way to phrase it, but I felt what it felt like to go against people who were much stronger than me. And I had never felt that before. I'd never felt someone grab me who was much stronger than me. I'd never felt that. And I was like, oh shit, I want to do that to other people. I want to have, because it's scary.
Yeah.
When you're in a fight and like you're in a match and you shake their hand or they grab you for the first time and you feel that they're stronger than you, it's like, God damn it. And even though, like, if you win, it's still scary. So I wanted to be able to do that to other people because I thought that was a tremendous psychological advantage to that. In that first second you grab them and have them say, oh shit. Then the other reason was because I thought that girls really were going to care about like six pack and all of that stuff. So I wanted to look good naked for girls, and that was it. And ironically, the only thing that happened is guys wanted to know how I got a six pack. Like, that's it. Girls didn't give a shit about that at all. So, yeah, that's literally, those were the two reasons. It was not social. In fact, I actually hated working out with other people. I thought that they slowed me down. They would talk a lot. They wanted it to be social and I didn't want it to be social. I just wanted to work really, really, really hard and get strong and jacked. And that was it.
Yeah. So when we think about our listener and her question, you know, one of the things that I wanted to get at was the dynamic between her son, the friends, and her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because in your situation, it sounds like this was a kind of a solo endeavor. You were mm-hmm. on a quest to get better at wrestling, to get stronger, to look good for the ladies. And, you know, you went after it. It sounds like with him, you know, there's a social element. He's doing it with his friends. And he's no longer doing it with mom. What would you have to say to her about that?
Yeah, I mean, number one, and my kid's not even a year, so I don't have much experience with this. But what I'll say is, like, I'm fully prepared by, like, 8 years old to have my daughter be like, I don't want to hang out with you guys anymore. That's why I'm milking it as much as I can right now. Like, I'm taking videos of her being excited to see me and all that stuff. Like, I know it's not going to last long. So there's that, and like, it's normal for kids to want to distance themselves from their parents, especially in those teenage years. That's like, I absolutely did that. The other aspect, there are many other aspects, but another one is, let's just say maybe he has the same goals that I did, or at least the goal of looking good naked, like for girls. I would imagine there aren't many teenage boys who are telling their moms about that, right? Like, there might be some, but I don't think that's a very common thing to be like, well, yeah, mom, I'm really doing this so that like I can impress Jenny with my physique, da, 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 whatever, you know, like, I just don't think that's happening. Whereas if the other boys also have similar goals of, you know, getting stronger and looking good naked, they can hang out and that is part of their camaraderie. They're going through the struggle together. It's one of the most amazing ways to build friendships and to build a community is to go through that same struggle. And if they are going through the same struggle for the same goal, it makes a lot of sense that they're going to do this together. And also, I mean, I would imagine that whether he knows it or not, he might not realize the workouts that his mom is doing will probably help him achieve that goal. But he might think, oh, it's my mom. She's doing girl workouts. So that is like different. And his friends are probably doing a lot of curls, a lot of bench press. And that's what he thinks he needs to do. And I'm completely making this up. It's a complete speculative story.
Sure.
But I've been around high school boys a lot. Like, having been one myself and then having coached a lot of them are doing curls and bench press and abs, very little legs, mm-hmm. because that's what they think that they're supposed to do. I could imagine being a high school boy and seeing like my mom doing a hip thrust and me being like, yeah, I'm definitely not doing that. Like, I'm going to go do curls instead. Right. So even though hip thrust would be a really great exercise for a high school boy to do for a number of different reasons, I could just see, be like, yeah, I'm just going to go work out with my friends. So it's not surprising in the least at all. It's not a bad thing. I think it's a really good thing. I would honestly say like it might be more worrisome if your son wanted to hang out with you all the time and didn't want to hang out with friends and didn't want like this friend, like people invited him to go lift. He's like, no, I don't want to go do that. I just want to hang out with my mom. I just want to hang out with my mom. Like the reverse would probably be a little bit more weird and more concerning than what's going on right now. What's going on right now sounds like it's a normal 15-year-old boy who just wants to hang out with his friends and get jacked. Like, that's it. That's, yeah. You got a great problem on your hands.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, you're right to kind of parse out the potential attachment here from mom versus kind of the programming concerns.
Mm-hmm.
But I am interested in exploring that a little bit. You know, she didn't give too much detail as to what kind of programming they were doing together versus what her son is doing with her friends. Other than mention, he's no longer doing cardio.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds
mm-hmm.
like cardio was something that they used to do. Zooming out, like, what would you recommend at that age for a training protocol you know, if they're just doing curls, is that cool because they're teenagers, or is it better to do something more well-rounded with compound movements? Should he be worried about cardio, or is weightlifting enough? Like, what are your general kind of thoughts around all that?
Yeah, you know, it's very difficult, but I would say you're gonna have a very hard time convincing your son that he's doing something wrong. It's not that you can't, but it's gonna be very hard. I think, especially just with words. I know when I was a teenager, you could have all the right words, but I had this block. I had this beaver built a dam in my brain that was like the right words just smacked right off of it, and it just didn't go anywhere. So I think if there's one way to really show him the importance of compound movements, for example, of squatting and deadlifting and all that, the best way would be for you to do it and to do more than him. Like, to lift heavier than him, just so you can be like, oh, like, by the way, here's me deadlifting 225 pounds. What did you do today? And then have him be like, what the fuck did you just say? Like, and have you lift more or as much as him and his friends are? That would get him to be like, oh shit, I got to work on this. Like, if you're hip thrusting 315, his eyes are going to open wide, be like, geez, like, that's a lot of weight. I want to see if I can do that. So I think, I don't know anything about high school girls. I don't know anything about high school girls. I will find out, God willing, one day. Because my daughter, but high school boys, I understand very well. And showing them that you are stronger than them, that's a surefire way to get them to be like, all right, well, it's like a competition. So for you to show that, hey, I can do this, is going to make a big difference. So that would be a major, rather than talking about it, doing it. Mm-hmm. From there, I think the most important thing you can do is support. Is just support and let him be. You know, he's his own human. He's his own person. And realistically, like, if he was going to be a professional athlete, then there'd probably be other coaches in his life and other people who'd be steering him in the right direction, I would hope. It doesn't sound like you anticipate him being a professional athlete. It sounds like he's just a regular high school kid who's hanging out with his friends. And if he just wants to do curls and bench press, like, great. There have been some amazing, amazing people who've done that when they were young and then turn out to do much better when they get older. Like, we all do stupid shit when you're younger. And the reality is, I'd rather him be doing curls and bench press than cocaine, right? It's like, there's so many worse things he could be doing, or sitting on the couch smoking weed all day. It's like, your son is getting up and working out with friends. Like, that is freaking awesome as compared to so many of the other things that he could be doing. Even just sitting down and spending time on TikTok or Instagram, like, thank God he's with real people in a real community working out. And who cares if the programming isn't great? Like, it doesn't fucking matter. He's working out and he's learning. So I think that the best thing you could do is show him support and love. I'm so proud of you. Da da da. By the way, here's my 225 deadlift. What'd you do today, bitch? Just like, talk a little shit to him.
Can you imagine that breakfast conversation?
That would be the greatest breakfast of all time. Just like, oh, here's your eggs. Here's your eggs, honey. By the way, I deadlifted 225 this morning at 4 a.m. while you were sleeping. Like, good luck. Yeah, that's what I would do.
Yeah. So maybe optimization at this age isn't as critical. Like, we're missing the point if we're too
optimization
concerned about that.
Is critical, but the definition of optimization changes at this age. Optimizing your program is not about optimizing the physiological results and adaptations. Optimizing the program is like, I love you. You're like, I'm so proud of you. Like, that's part of program optimization. It's so many people look at programs as just sets and reps and exercises. There's so many other aspects of a program. Like, even for example, when I was doing one-on-one coaching, one of the complaints I got from people when they came from other coaches was they just felt like a number. When they came from other coaches, I felt like a number. I felt like he didn't really know me. For every program, I would come up with a nickname for this person. And based on whatever, like, they wrote in their consult or whatever they wrote in their pre-consult information, they'd say, I want to do this, or I want to do that, or I love this, or my dog's name is, whatever it is. They would put some information in there and I would make a nickname for them. And so on their program, it would see like their first name in quotes, their nickname, and then their last name, sort of like fighters. Like, you know, it's like Chuck, the Iceman, Liddell, or whatever it is. So I would put like their name, their nickname, and then their last name. And people loved it. And because the only way I could come up with those nicknames is if I actually paid attention to their intake forms and I read what mm-hmm. they said. I knew a little bit about them. And that way, like, they felt like, oh, he really designed this program for me. And then they would give those programs much more effort because they knew that I was actually checking on them, that I cared about them. That's program optimization from the perspective of just letting them know that you care about them. Mm-hmm. I would put funny little notes in there. Like, if I know, like, if they hate a certain exercise, I would write, I know you said you hate this exercise, but that's why I'm putting it in there, motherfucker. Go get it. And they'd be like, ah, ha, ha. And then they do it. Whereas before, they might not have done it because they would have thought, I told them I hate that exercise. I don't really want to do it. So I'm just going to skip it. But now they do it knowing I did it deliberately. Mm-hmm. These are like minuscule aspects of program optimization that no one talks about. That's like, what's going to get them to just be more likely to do it, to have fun with it? That to me is an equal component of which exercises and how many sets and reps.
Yeah. Yeah. And I do wonder if there's an opportunity there, you know, like, I know it's hard to get presents for kids a lot of times, especially once they get a little older, just because teenagers, you know, they have interests and you might not know what they are, what's cool. But it sounds like there might be an opportunity there, like for Christmas or for the birthday, to get something, you know, weightlifting related, something that, you know, his friends would think is cool, something that he can use.
100%. That was like all of my gifts after 14 years old. Well, there were two. My mom would never go without getting me a book because okay. she's like, always have to get a book, you know, ultimate Jewish mother, like you have to read, you have to read. So always books. And then,
hey, but you
to
knew me, that Malcolm Gladwell, like, it, out of nowhere.
Dude, Malcolm Gladwell's a genius. That's like it's one of the greatest books of all time, and he's one of the greatest authors of all time. But in her, she would get me a lot of like nutrition books. She would like some really early ones that really shaped the way I think, and then I realized that there were a lot of propaganda based later on, but either way, like there's some, it was very good education early on, but she, it was that and then workout stuff. So she would get me like workout bands. She would go mm-hmm. to like TJ Maxx because everything was on discount at TJ Maxx, so get workout bands. Or I'll never get, I think one of the greatest gifts I got in high school was this boxing DVD, and it was just shadow boxing, and I don't even remember the guy who was teaching it, but he was a boxer. And
I thought you were going to say Tai Bo at first.
No, it was not Tai Bo. No, it was like legit boxing. And I loved it. And man, I'd all get hyped. I'd get hyped up. I'd blast music. Actually, what I would do is I'd have my CD player in my pocket and I'd have my headphones on, the ones that wrapped around the back of your ear.
Oh, I remember those.
Oh, and I'd go. And then I had to like start pulling my punches a little bit, though. I did not punch as hard because my CD player would skip if I punched really hard. You remember
man,
that?
The kids aren't going to get that one, man. They're yeah. Like, what do you mean?
What do you mean your CD player would skip? Like, yeah, dude. Like, I remember when I would go on runs, I would have to hold my CD player in my hand and try and be light on mm-hmm. the bounces so mm-hmm. it wouldn't skip.
And then they would, you know, come out with the anti-skip technology.
And it didn't
and
work.
Some were better than others, though. And so what would happen is it would, like, delay the skip.
Man, yeah, dude, those were the days. Big pockets on your jean shorts, and tuck that CD player right in there.
You could tuck it right in. Like, you could put five of those things in there.
Do you remember, how old are you, Tony?
I'm 35.
Okay, got it. So do you remember when it was like the thing to make someone you had a crush on a CD?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That was like,
I got a lot of mileage out of that.
I made you this CD, man. I don't know. All these songs made me think of you.
All 21 of them.
Oh, man. Dude, yeah, but like put a lot of time into it. I burned it for you. Yeah, absolutely. That was the best.
How much did you think about like song order?
Not much, to be honest yeah. with you. I know other people did, but I didn't. I was just like, I'm just going to put all these on. These are important for you to listen to.
See, for me, the way that the song ended and then the next one began, that was like the art of it. Like I'd pick the songs and then it was all about putting them in the proper order. And
that's why you do what you do. You're so good at this, man.
And that brought me back. You know, one of the first fitness gifts that I got from my parents was those. Remember the Perfect Push-Up?
Oh, my God. I got those as well as a gift. Yeah.
I still have them. They're right
Do you
there.
Use them?
They're sometimes, yeah.
I love yeah. that.
I like them for, you know, variety.
They had such good commercials. Their marketing was on point.
The dude was always jacked.
And when he was.
When you're a teenager, you're like, yeah, that's going to be me.
Yeah. You know what's funny? I bet by today's social media standards, people would think that he looks average at best based on the drugs that people use and based on photo editing and like Photoshop and all that stuff.
Oh, wow,
I bet
really?
If I bet, let me pull this guy up. Let me pull this guy up. Perfect push up. Let me just see if the advertisement comes up. Images, perfect push up. Dude, you're going to laugh. If you Google this, like the guy in the actual commercial, like he looks like a fit dude. And he looked like, I think he looks great. But I know by today's standards of what people think is really fit, people would not be overly impressed, which is crazy.
So you just did perfect push up images?
I did perfect push up images. Now I'm looking at perfect because was it by Bowflex? Is that who did it?
I'm not sure. I imagine there's a bunch of them now. Yeah, I see what you're saying. Do you know the term 90s small?
90s small.
So there was a website that one of my buddies who was really into weightlifting in college, and it was called 70s Big, and it was this blog, and it was these guys who were just trying to get like as massive and muscular as possible.
Yeah.
And so they called it 70s Big, and that was like the archetype, like these dudes with mullets and like mustaches and mutton chops. And just like enormous muscular dudes. And so they would kind of speak derisively about people who are like the current fitness trend at that time, which was 90s small.
Yeah, that's what they called it.
And it was like, you know, like Edward Norton from American History X. Super lean, muscular, but not.
Like Brad Pitt in Fight Club type thing.
Yeah, exactly. So it's interesting that that's come back around, you think.
You see that link that I just sent
you? Yeah, yeah. 90 click small, that. Dude.
Dude, you see the picture of this guy? Mm-hmm. This is the guy who was on the commercial. And the blonde guy, or like the sort of brown or blonde, whatever. You can see what I'm talking about. He does not look jacked at all compared to today's standards.
Like compared to the CrossFit athlete or?
Compared to the steroided out, like anyone on social media who calls themselves an influencer who is like, yeah, you know, all I do is like, I just lift weights and do cardio. And it's like, they're not mentioning the fucking test, DECA, D-ball, trend, all that shit that they're on. And like, this looks like a normal, healthy dude. And back in the day, I was like, man, that guy is jacked. Mm-hmm. But now looking at him, like, he looks like a normal dude, which is crazy because he's unbelievably fit, but your mind gets warped by today's standards, by the stuff that we see online.
And so for a teenager, right, you know, I do think it's worth discussing. I mean, even at that time when someone who was unbelievably jacked was probably, you know, 170 pounds, it was even more achievable back then, right?
Yeah.
And it was still sort of this impossible standard for a 15-year-old.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So I can only imagine what that would be like for someone in high school today.
Dude, it's very scary. It's very scary. We're seeing more and more deaths in the fitness industry with kids who are very young. Joe Aesthetics, I don't know if you saw Joe Aesthetics, rest in peace. Young kid, 30 years old, just passed away.
Wait, from what?
So I believe it was an aneurysm. And I never spoke to him. I looked up to him. I admired him. He always seemed like an incredible man. I don't know. And I don't want to say, well, it was because of this or because of that, because we don't know. So I can't attribute it to anything other than all I know is I'm pretty sure it was an aneurysm. And the cause of that aneurysm, I can't say. All I know is that the amount of drugs being done in this industry are more than ever before. And, you know, it's interesting in a very, it's a terrible way. Most of the conversation around body image standards are discussed around women and how it's completely unrealistic. And it's true. It's very true. But the body image standards placed on men are also not only completely unrealistic, but also incredibly dangerous. Mm-hmm. And it's not a competition. Like, they're both awful. Mm-hmm. One thing, though, that I've seen in recent years, though, is that the standards for women have begun to change, and that you can look at magazines and you can say, like, the whole body positivity movement is geared towards women.
Mm-hmm.
You've never seen ever on a magazine, an overweight man on a magazine saying like, this is health, ever. We've seen that now multiple times in different magazines, in different stores, because they're trying to be more inclusive for women. Now, what you have to really think about is, why is this only happening for women and not men? And unfortunately, I think it has to do with money. because who are the largest consumers of these brands and products? Women. And so in order for these companies to potentially maximize their growth and their revenue, they want more women supporting them. They don't care what anyone else is like, hey, if we can get more women supporting us, then we'll make more money. That's where I think a lot of these like companies and magazines and stuff, I think that's why they're doing it. Not because they actually care about women, but because they're trying to make more money. Whereas for the male products, they know for a fact that like most men tend to be a little bit more blunt. They're like, yeah, I'm fat. Yeah, it's definitely not good. Like dudes are like, yeah, I'm just fat. Like this isn't good. I need to lose weight. So if they put an overweight guy on one of these, whether it's a magazine or whatever, like they know a lot of men are going to be like, that's bullshit. Like I know I eat like an asshole. I need to lose weight. So you look at a lot of these body image standards placed on men where dudes are juiced out of their mind. And they're not only are these body image standards unrealistic, but they're actually injecting themselves with often illegal steroids in completely unhealthy amounts, risking going to jail and risking death in order to reach these levels of growth. It's fucking wild. It's really insane.
Have you seen the the injections people use?
It's Synthol? Just
like fake muscle.
Yeah, Synthol.
That stuff's so sad.
Yeah, it's terrible. Yeah. All of it. All of it's terrible. And then, you know, social media, I think, makes it way worse because you see people and you see their highlights and you think like, oh my God, look how jacked, look how shredded, whatever it is. That's why so much of my messaging has changed. My messaging has never really been about aesthetics. It's been historically more about performance, but even more in the last couple of years, it's just been about health. Mm-hmm. Just like taking the focus away from what you see someone look like on the outside, because what they look like on the outside doesn't fucking matter if the inside is all messed up. And mm-hmm. and seeing all these deaths, very early, very young deaths happening has just been a huge wake up call, especially to me in regards to not only how I need to live my life, but the type of content I need to put out there, because people are just being massively, massively misled down a path that I think is far more dangerous than they realize.
So for a parent of a teenager, how would you recommend they talk to their kids about this issue?
You know, that's a great question. And I struggle with it because I think about how I'll discuss it with my daughter when she's older. And I don't know. I have no idea, because I know kids generally don't listen to their parents. Not always, but kids often look at their parents like, yeah, 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 yeah. So if I were trying to plan something ahead of time for my daughter, it would be getting her connected with people that I know that could talk to her about it. Because when it comes from your parent, oftentimes it just goes in one ear out the other. But when you can take it from someone else, whether it's my co-coach Susan or another woman in the industry who has been through this and who knows the ins and outs and has developed a good relationship with my daughter that she can look up to them as sort of a mentor, then I would do that. And it doesn't have to come from me, just as long as they're getting the message and they're internalizing it. So I'd probably try and find a woman in the industry for my daughter and maybe a man in the industry for a son who knows what they're talking about to try and get that message across. Because who cares if it comes from you or not, as long as they're understanding the message.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's a great point. Because like you said, teenagers listening to their parents don't usually go together.
Yeah, exactly.
I know that the goal should be, you know, when you're talking about program optimization for a teenager or for a child, the goal should be, you know, fun, supportive, healthy. But, you know, you were saying kids can strength train from a young age. How do you feel about cardio from a young age? I'm assuming it's similar because they're going to be running around and playing. But
yeah, I would not put a kid on a treadmill or an elliptical unless that kid wants to do it of their own volition and for fun. And I see that happen all the time. So the building I live in right now is both a residence and a hotel. And so the gym is shared. And very often there will be families staying in the hotel and the parents will come in with the kids and the kids are running around and I love it. The kids are playing and da da da. And then sometimes they'll hop on the elliptical. And then they'll just go and they'll be like, look how fast I can go. And I was like, damn, that's the fastest I've ever seen on that. And like they love it. And then they go even faster. And I'm like, that's fucking crazy. You're a speedster, whatever it is. And so I try and like cheer them on that way. But I would never be like, all right, time for cardio. Let's get on the treadmill. I wouldn't do that. The only time I would start doing that, and it's not a certain age, it's a certain level of, I would say, a certain level of determination that the kid has in order to be the best at whatever it is they're doing. So if I have a kid who is determined to be a great athlete, then I'm gonna be like, okay, so where are you failing? Where are you struggling? If the kid's like, listen, like I'm really feeling like my conditioning is a negative factor in my performance, then okay, then let's get some conditioning in. Mm-hmm. But I would wait until they're cognizant enough to have that conversation. I wouldn't say, all right, let's get on the treadmill. I think that's a dangerous game to play. Whereas if I have a kid and my kid is like, hey, I want to do theater and I just want to do theater and act, then I'm not going to say, okay, let's get on the treadmill. I'm going to say, let's rehearse your lines. Let's like work out, like I'm going to spend time with my kid on what they want to focus on. And in terms of exercise, that will come through other movement and other play. I'm not going to get them on the fucking treadmill, especially as a young kid. So it's really about what they express interest in and where that's where we're going to spend our time. If like, hey, I really want to be better at chess, then I'm going to sit down. I'm going to, because I suck at chess. So I'm going to start studying chess and start learning, trying to see if I can get better at it so I can play with them. But a young kid, I'm not going to force to spend their extra time on the cardio. I'm going to, on a cardio machine. I'm going to like, let's go outside and play. Let's go maybe throw the ball around, play some soccer. Let's go, I don't know, let's go on a walk together, go on a run together. Let's just talk. Incorporate exercise into their life, not try and force their life into exercise.
Yeah, no, that's great. And we all know the stereotype of a, you know, the over-competitive parent. And that's like putting their kid in from a young age and getting all the trainers and like yelling on the sidelines. And, you know, I think as a society, we've sort of realized like, hey, maybe that's not the best way to do this.
Dude, it's terrible. It's so bad. It's so bad. Actually, I saw a video. So it's interesting. I don't like the idea of participation trophies, like everyone getting a trophy. I don't like that. But I also don't like the other extreme. And I saw this video of a dad talking to a group of kids. And I think, I don't know if they were playing baseball or what, but young kids, like between 6 to 8 at oldest. And he's kneeling down and he's telling these kids, he's like, basically he was saying, there are winners and there are losers. It is not okay to be a loser. If your dad told you that it's okay to be a loser, then your dad's a loser.
Boo.
And this clip has went viral on social media. And a lot of the comments were like, yeah, like go. I'm like, if I heard someone telling my kid that, the amount of restraint it would take not to knock him the fuck out would be, I don't know if I could do it. I don't know if I'd have that restraint. It's so outrageously disgusting, like that level, like in so many ways, like the creating distrust between the kid and the parent. That's like, don't ever do that. And then also, listen, the idea that like you need to be 6 to 8 years old and so focused on winning that like, God forbid you take a loss at 6 to 8 years old. Not to mention it's learning how to take a loss gracefully and humbly will set you up for success in life. That style of coaching sets you up to look at your loss as the ultimate failure and that you are now a loser. Your identity is a loser, which means how could you ever pick yourself back up again and try if you're just a loser? It's the worst. I would rather have participation trophies than that. If it's between those two awful choices, I would rather go with participation trophies because at least that's going to instill some level of confidence. I don't like it. I still think it's a really shitty idea. But the idea that like you're either a winner or a loser, get out. Like, that's just, and this is, I see so way too intense coaches, way too intense people pushing these young kids far beyond what is appropriate in any way, shape, or form. And dude, I even see issues like, even it, this might be a very unpopular opinion, but if we look at Olympic level gymnasts, for example, like most Olympic level gymnasts are like teenagers. They're young kids, dude. They're teenagers and they're putting their bodies through insane amounts of stress. Their minds through insane amounts of stress. It was actually one of the most amazing things we saw recently. One of the young women on the U.S. team in the previous Olympics, I believe she pulled out during the Olympics. She was like, my mental health is not where it needs to be. And there was a lot of hate, people being like, she took someone else's spot, which I agree she did. But what do you expect from a young kid? For her to have the emotional intelligence and the courage to tell the world my mental health isn't where it needs to be, I need to take a step away, is amazing. And it absolutely sucks that another young woman was not able to go to the Olympics because she had taken her spot. But how do you expect a young kid to have this level of knowledge and understanding, especially when all of their time is spent trying to be the best gymnast ever? It's like, you're not giving them an opportunity to grow. You're not giving them an opportunity to learn. You're forcing them to be in these outrageous levels of competition, which I have feelings with on both sides. I think it's great. If the kid wants to pursue it, that's amazing. But also it's like, what is that child giving up that they're never going to be able to get back? You know, it's a difficult conversation.
And in that situation, she's put in the spotlight.
Yeah.
Whereas before that, you know, trials or whatever, sure, there was probably a buzz around it. But when you're in the Olympics, I'm imagining now you're on the world stage.
Yeah.
And the pressure of that must be incredible.
And even crazier now than it ever was before with social media and all these posts. Like before, with the Olympics, you either watched it or you didn't. And you might hear a catch up about it on the news. But like, if you weren't watching it when it happened, you probably didn't see it. Now on social media, you could catch up on it. You can watch it. Like, people can share mini clips of what happened and post all their thoughts and da da da. It's like, I think it's way worse and way more difficult now than it ever has been. And especially being a kid in the Olympics, or being a kid with any level of fame like that, is just, I couldn't even imagine. And I have such a small level of that, like such a teeny like fraction of it. And I've decided, like, I don't want to get any more known at all. Like I want to hide in so many instances, not because I don't like people, but because of the fear of what that brings. And most people are so nice and so kind, but there's a small number of people who are crazy enough that it's like, this is just fucking scary.
Yeah.
It's just that level of people knowing who you are, watching you, like, no matter what, it's scary.
No, I can only imagine. And then, you know, even just the anonymous posters that just say mean stuff all the time, that's gotta be every athlete or every influencer or every celebrity. They probably have to deal with that 100-fold now compared to,
yes,
30 years ago, 20 years ago.
Yeah, exactly.
So one more question. In this situation, in this scenario, you know, with our listener, it sounds like everything's, you know, cool. She hasn't raised any red flags about her son's friends or any of the coaches or anything. But let's say, you know, a kid does have a bad coach, a mean coach, someone that's telling them, giving them toxic ideas about body image or their health or winning or any of those sort of, you know, the dark side of these competitive endeavors. How would you recommend a parent deal with that?
Man, I'll tell you what my gut went to, and then my like logical brain sort of came in after. My gut immediately went, take them out, remove them from that situation immediately. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to say that's wrong, but I'm going to say I also have a competing thought coming in. That's how my brain is. So I'll have a thought, and then another thought will be like, well, what about this? And I'll have a debate with myself.
Yeah.
Very rarely do I just have one black and white, like, this is it. It's like, I'm literally debating with myself, which maybe I should have been a lawyer. But
I think it was Mark Twain who said, an intelligent man can hold two competing thoughts in his head at the same time.
I struggle with that a lot, man. It's like every thought that comes out of my mouth is like, there's another thought. Well, what about this? And this is like, that's why I struggle with politics, because I see both sides like very clearly. It's not just one or the other. It's like, well, no, that makes sense. Oh, but this also makes sense. It's like, geez. So in terms of this, my gut was take them out. Now, I think it is very situational dependent. There are some instances which, like, you just got to remove them from that situation no matter what, get them away. There are other situations in which they need to learn for themselves. And it would be doing your child a disservice to remove them from that situation without the chance to show what they can do and giving it their all. I mean, there were situations in which, I'll give it one situation. So for me personally, I was in wrestling. There were a lot of politics with it. And I had some coaches that were great and some coaches that were just absolutely terrible. There was one situation in which, and I think I've told the story, in which my coach put me at a weight class that was completely inappropriate for me. And my mom drove to the doctor's house that night and basically it was like, nope, you're going to change this because it is completely inappropriate. And it was like, I was like 115 pounds and they said I can compete at 103 and I was already super skinny. And like, there's no way that I should be cutting 12 pounds at 15 years old when I like, no. And I had already had disordered relationship with food at that point. So she immediately drove there. She took it in her hands. She was like, this is completely inappropriate because she knew that I would cut to 103. I would starve myself. I would do whatever I had to do in order to do it. So she's like, nope, absolutely not. She didn't pull me out, but she said, you can still wrestle, but you wrestle at a different weight, which I think was the right decision. There were other things that happened, other political decisions that were made by the coaches, things that happened in which she could have pulled me out, but she was like, you need to make this decision for yourself. I'm not the one wrestling. I'm not the one on the team. I'm not the one dealing with these coaches. You are. Is it worth it for you? And I had to make that choice. And I think it gave me a sense of independence and it gave me an opportunity to take responsibility for my own choices where I was like, I am the one choosing to be here. I'm the one who's like, I'm choosing to be at this practice every day dealing with this shit. I'm the one choosing to be here in this situation. It's not my mom. It's not. And if she had pulled me out, I probably would have resented her. I probably been like, you made that choice for me. Granted, at this point in time, I was 15, 16, 17 years old. So it's different if you have a 6, 7, 8 year old, right? I think if you have a young kid, I think at that point, like you've got to take control and say, if you see something you don't like, you either fix it first. And if you can't fix it because whoever's in charge isn't letting that happen, then you take them out. You get them a new coach. You find a new situation. If they're a little bit older in that teenage years, you give them some level of autonomy and the ability to make those choices. But again, it does depend on the severity of what's happening and what you deem to be fit. But I'd say the older they are, give them a little bit more autonomy. The younger they are relying on you to make sure that they are in the best place for them mentally, physically, and emotionally. So sometimes the younger, you might need to be a little bit more quick with those decisions.
Yeah, totally.
And just be decisive with it.
Do you have any other last thoughts about training for kids, training for teenagers?
I'm just going to leave off with make it fun. Just make it fun. It's about optimization for these kids. Programs is fun. That's it. That's number one. They're kids. It's supposed to be fun. You're only a kid once. You have the rest of your life to be an adult. You're a kid for one teeny tiny blip in your life. And I think part of your job as a parent is to make it a fun experience. And because when you make something like exercise fun, you set them up for a lifetime of health. When you make exercise a punishment, then you make exercise a lifetime of punishment. So make it fun, make it enjoyable, make it a great bonding experience for all of you. And if your kid doesn't want to bond with you over it, then fine. They don't have to. That's their choice, right? Especially if they, like, go let them bond with their friends over it. You don't want your kid just all around, like you might want your kid around you, but all the time, but it's probably not good for your kid just to be like next to their mom and dad all day, every day. Like they need to go out, they need to be with friends. So support them and encourage them and let them have like the best time of their life.
That's awesome, man. Thank you so much.
Thank you, bro. This was great. Love this. Real conversations.
And you want to thank the listeners?
Of course I want to thank the listeners. Thank you everyone for listening. I appreciate you. If you have any questions, any things you want Tony and I to discuss, please shoot Tony a message. We'll put his Instagram handle in the description. If you could leave a 5-star review, that would be wonderful. It would mean the world to me. And that's it. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful day. We'll talk to you soon.